Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Thanks very much for downloading this podcast. Hope you enjoy it. There's only this one and next week's to go before we take a short break. Hopefully we'll be back in June and July. If we can afford to do more of them, you can help out a little bit with that, either by going to gofasterstripe.com/badges, making a one-off or monthly donation. That would be a fantastic help. You could go to gofasterstripe.com and buy any of my DVDs. We're All Going to Die is available on DVD for £15, or you could just download the show with only a couple of the extras rather than the full package of extras for £5 at gofasterstripe.com. I'm also on tour. Go to richardherring.com and click on my face and you'll be able to find out if I'm coming near to you. Also, if you like eBay, look me up. I'm Herring1967 and I'm selling lots of Lee and Herring and Time Gentlemen Please and Richard Herring memorabilia. All of that money made from that will go towards funding future internet projects. But without any further ado, let us listen to this week's Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre, as it is now called. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. Will you please welcome the host of Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast? It is Richard Herring. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast, or as some of the cool kids have started calling it, Rehearl Leicester Pan. There's quite a lot of the cool kids, and some of the uncool kids still doing it in the old way. I don't know if I was talking about the YouGov survey over the last couple of weeks. I don't know if I mentioned this last week, but I did notice that my fans on there are the most left-wing of any fans. They're slightly to the left of Stuart Lee fans. They're more left wing than Stuart. They're more left wing than Karl Marx fans. That is, which is pretty incredible. So we may, if I can get the internet working, we may talk a little bit about that. Yesterday I was on Sunday Brunch. I don't know if anyone watches that show. It didn't work out too well for me. I was a bit tired. I've not been very well this week. I was a bit tired, and it is kind of a slightly surreal experience. They were kind of at the start. It's Tim Lovejoy and Simon Rimmer, but he got teased at school because he has the same name as that bloke from off of Red Dwarf. So it's Sure, I did that joke in the last series. But no one listens back. And you know, they cover quite a lot in the 3 hours. So in the opening bit, they're going to. Jason Manford was on, and Ollie Merce was on, and Catherine Jenkins, the singer, was on. And then there was a woman who was going to show them how to make shoes. Seems an odd. But just as they cut to her, she was making some shoes, and Jason Manford said, "Do we need to see her making shoes? They could just, we don't need to see it illustrated." A woman who was making marmalade. But my favourite bit was at the end, after it was all over, Ollie Merce. He's a singer from off of The X Factor, I believe. He's the new Robbie Williams, because we need a second one of those. And Catherine Jenkins, he said to her, "Oh, well, it was lovely to meet you." And Catherine Jenkins said, "You've met me loads of times." And he said, "Have I?" He said, "Yeah, we went out for an evening with a group of friends. We had a whole night together." And Ollie Merce had forgotten. I turned to Jason Manford. He said, "You know, if I'd said which one of those two people wasn't going to remember meeting the other one, would definitely have been the other way around for me." So anyway, look, we'll crack straight on because we've got two fantastic podcasts. I'm a bit annoyed. I didn't notice until I got out here that I've been given the shit chair. I know that both my guests have been given this fantastic chair. That seems very unfair to me. But anyway, let's crack on. We will. I've got two guests. They're both coming on. They'll come on together. First one is probably best known as the medic from Time Gentlemen Please, Charlie the Medic. He also played Ian Snell, of course, in Excavating Rita. That's Trevor Locke. And also from the Ragu advert, it is Paul Putner. Will you please welcome Trevor Locke and Paul Putner. They've come on from the middle. There they go. Please sit down. Make yourselves at home. Pick up a mic. Yep, that mic you're sitting on. Paul Putner just sat on his mic. I did that earlier. It was quite a pleasant experience to sit on your mic. How are you, fellas?
Yeah, very well, thank you.
You're both bearded men, I notice.
We are bearded men.
That's right.
What's the you got the part of the Captain Bird's Eye moving on from Ragu?
No, I'm just because I was saying earlier that I gather it's really trendy to have a thick beard at the moment, and I just have it because I'm a middle-aged man. And it hides a multitude of chins, as I say. Yeah. That's not trendy. And I'm not doing it for any charity either. So there. I'm doing it for me.
You could shave it off for charity, I believe Stuart Lee has a routine about that. So, Trevor, that's right.
I'm Paul Trevor.
It's been a while since I've seen you.
It's the beards.
I'm Natalie, by the way.
We haven't seen each other since 1999 when we last did this morning. Yeah. You played the small face boy, I believe. Is that correct?
Yes.
No, Trevor, you're not allowed to speak. We can't pay you to speak. You are allowed to be. You're better. It'd probably be better if you do speak. You don't seem to have aged at all in the last 15, 16 years. Yeah. I'm not saying, Paul, that you have aged. It's hard to determine you when you haven't got an orange head on. It's difficult to tell how old
skin has basically turned orange since then.
What is the secret of this eternal youth that you have?
Well, I drank a magic potion in the Amazon jungle in 1999, in fact. Yeah. And ever since then, life has stood still.
Like Big John, Little John. Yeah. Before your time. We did discuss that, I think, on a previous... I think that's another pointless reminiscence from the 1970s, which has been a running theme throughout this series. So, look, we all first met. You and I had met a little bit a year before, but we were in the play Excavating Rita.
Yeah, we met doing that play, didn't we?
That is how we actually got...
Which was 1997.
I think it was 1997.
It was 1997. Yeah. It was the summer of 1997. It was June, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Well, that's
Battersea.
When it began.
It was Battersea. Yeah.
When Battersea, we did start, and then we went to Edinburgh and did it. I only lost £10,000 on that play, so I was quite... Now, in retrospect, I'm quite happy with that. That was quite... Well, and I then wrote two episodes of Time Gentlemen Please based on that play and made the money back. So that is was a result.
We're recycling.
Hopefully there'll be a Rasputin version of Time Gentlemen Please remixed. Do you remember much about Excavating Rita? When we talked about it backstage, Trevor looked like he'd forgotten he was in it.
No, I do remember. I remember the smell of the dressing room, actually.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, because I went near that dressing room this summer. and it smelt completely different.
Oh, really? The one in Battersea?
No, the one in the Pleasance up in Edinburgh. It was really fetid and quite nice, actually. It was a really nice smell. But it's gone, that smell.
I can't remember. We were in the Pleasance out the one outside. We were in the upstairs. Look, someone's just put their hand around to close the... Look at that.
No, I remember probably your arse. Because Richard used to, his character had to strip off in this kind of drunken breakdown.
Yeah, whoever wrote it made me do that. That wasn't my doing.
And of course, you're in these quite small venues. You've got someone going, "Oh, getting your clothes off," and you're stood right next to them, and then you just sort of there, just watching.
Yeah.
In detail.
Yeah. Still bringing back any memories?
Yes.
Still, that my arse is like your face, Trevor. You know, that sounds rude. That sounds ruder. No, I meant it. It hasn't aged.
Oh, okay.
I thought
you meant it's really hairy and a little bit too small.
It is. The actual anus is too small for the buttocks. Yeah. That's the. It's a size 4 anus on a size 10 buttock.
When I did.
Wow.
When I did Little Britain Live...
we can talk about your less successful stuff. Yeah.
I had to sit very close in the wings to watch David Walliams strip off in a similar thing. And,
He got all his ideas from me.
He's got a very big bottom for the size of his anus, though, hasn't he?
Apparently.
Big anus. Massive arsehole. But...
Hang on, there was another 70s show.
There is actually another weird link-up with Excavating Rita and Fist of Fun, anyway, and I'm slightly disappointed with Shot Julian, that we all got together again to do a read-through in a theatre and the possibility a few years later that it might become an actual play in the West End. And Julia Sawala was cast as one of the parts, which, you know, she got the part for some reason. She ended up getting cast somehow in that. And in Fist of Fun, I had the Julia Sawala shrine dedicated to her. And then after that, we got on quite well in the rehearsals and we started going out with each other.
Oh.
That was quite weird.
You failed to mention how she learned.
Oh, yeah. This was quite an awkward moment within it all.
We've just done this read through in the West End. So we're up in a pub in St. Martin's Lane. And... the beer was flowing, and I turned to Julia and I went, "So, what did you make of the old Sawala shrine?" And she went, "What?" I mean, the bit where he was madly crazed, lusting over you every week on this show that lots of people watched, and you actually didn't see that. You don't know what I'm talking about. And then she kind of went off.
She stormed out.
With the hump?
Yeah, she had the hump and stormed out, so I thought you'd blown it. I was really embarrassed because I couldn't believe she hadn't... No one had brought it up for the 2 days we were rehearsing. And then she...
I thought you must have mentioned it to her.
Well, why would you storm out? Why is that unpleasant to know that someone that is attracted to you once made a shrine about
you? She thought we were... It was weird.
And did the line, "My favourite woman is the head of Julia Sawala and the body of Julia Sawala." Then why don't you just say the whole of Julia Sawala? "I didn't say anything about them being joined."
Yeah. She did. She didn't have a great. She didn't have a great sense of humour, so she didn't like people. She thought we were laughing at her.
Of course, she went out with you in the end.
But she didn't have a great sense of humour because I also told her that joke, and she found that quite flattering. She didn't understand that it should have been a sign that it wasn't going to work out. But we gave it a good crack.
There was another weird thing that happened that afternoon. Was that we finished this read-through, and as we were all walking up to the pub, I went, "Oh, Richard, hang on a minute. I think we left some scripts. Are we all going back for some reason?" He went, "Oh, no. Look, I'll get a pint in for you. Could you run back to the theatre and pick up these scripts?" So I went back down, and as I was going down, I saw John Hurt spinning round in this long leather coat in the middle of the road. And I thought, what the bloody hell's going on? And as I got nearer, I noticed it was people taking photographs. And he was doing a production of Crap's Last Tape. at the Ambassador's Theatre, where we were doing our table read. Anyway, so I walked past and I went, distracted. Went into this theatre, it's a bit dark down here, just come down these steps. Right, here we go. Oh, the stage. It was pitch black. Suddenly the lights went, ding! Who are you? I was on the set of The Mousetrap, which is the theatre right next door to the Ambassador's. And it just goes to show you, if you've got enough confidence, you can walk onto the stage of any West End theatre.
And the play was going on, and the
yes.
I did it!
I did it!
Me, the Curious Orange did it.
Oh, true story.
Never saw that coming. It was a very weird, very strange week, that week.
Yes.
That was also the week, I think I've talked about this before, but a brief, where I had a recurring, I had one of those dreams that you can control. What's the...
A lucid
dream. But then it got out of control, and then it turned into one of those dreams where I kept on waking up, and then you know, was still in the dream. And so I kept waking up, and then looking around the room, and it all, and then I'd see a little Joss stick burning, and go, well, that couldn't be there. And then I'd wake up again, and it went on. I thought I'd died because I couldn't wake up, and I thought, I can only escape, the alarm's going to go off, and unless the alarm wakes me up, I'm never going to wake up.
Like that episode of Hammer House of Horror, Rude Awakenings of Denham Elliot,
yes,
which we all remember, don't we?
I imagine it was very like that. And so I was, that was very weird. And then we went to do this rehearsal, and then I started going out with Julia Swala, and I thought, hold. Because sometimes the dream would go. And I'm still slightly worried that I might just, this might be just a very, very long part. And I'm just about to wait. Well, actually, that'd be quite cool to just suddenly wake up back in 1999 again. Come on. Please let me wake up and let me have another go at those last 15 years. It can't possibly have gone worse. Then it's gone. So, do you remember the ragu advert you were in?
Yeah. Well, it wasn't ragu.
Oh, what was it?
It was Dolmio.
Oh, well.
It's
a bit classier, I'll give you that.
Yeah. Yes, I do remember it because we had to film it in Tuscany. And it was me, this Greek guy, and this woman who was Spanish, all pretending to be Italian in front of an Italian film crew, which was quite embarrassing. But yeah. Before the kick-off, Mama liked to make a tasty pasta sauce.
Did all the Italian film crew eat Dolmio sauce? Or do they all ate ragu when that's what they...
Yeah, yeah. And then we got replaced by those bloody horrible-eyed puppets they have now.
And you're well known for being in... Both of you actually were in Time, Gentlemen, Please. That was my chosen... You played Charlie the Medic.
Yeah, I remember
which
that.
Which had quite a meta joke in it. Do you remember it?
Yeah, I do remember it.
Quite a meta joke that I don't think anyone got, that we placed you on Charlie's from Casualty and you delivered all your lines looking over the shoulder like that. Like they're like from Charlie from Casualty.
Yeah.
Did.
Yeah, yeah,
he
yeah,
never
yeah.
looks... He always sort of never looks anyone in the face and you did that. And I don't know if anyone ever noticed it. Yeah. But
people did notice and thought that I was a very bad actor. For years, I tried to suppress that episode.
And yet, Charlie from Casualty is considered, you know, he's been working, he's still in Casualty. I saw him.
He's got secrets, he knows stuff.
I thought he would be dead by now, Charlie from Casualty.
No.
He survived all the way through. And in a show called Casualty as well. That is.
Well, it's because he's always looking for danger.
But the reason that, I guess, part of the reason you ended up in This Morning with Rich Not Judy was because of that Edinburgh. When you're in Excavating Greta, because to save money and to pay you a bit of money,
because
we weren't really paying you, I don't think, to be in the play, we paid you £10 a day to come and be in the stage, in the Edinburgh version of This Morning with Rich Not Judy that we and Stu were doing at lunchtime. Mm-hmm. And you and Natalie both came across and were our new bar slaves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that was how that role came about.
Yeah, and you just kept us in for the real thing.
Yeah, though we didn't make you dress up quite as much. You quite enjoyed dressing up, I think, and Natalie didn't enjoy dressing up as much, did she?
I loved it, and I still had the skin-tight gold suit that I had to wear for being an Oscar, and I used to wear that in my life. And in fact, my career as a stand-up comedian stalled because I wore it at a Jongleurs in Luton. It was my first ever chance to do a showcase at a Jongleurs. I don't know if you know what Jongleurs is like. It's like Live at the Apollo, and I had a 10-minute spot, and I just had this costume fitted for me, and I thought, this looks amazing. I'm gonna come out on stage and tell them I'm all from the future. and then just riff it from there. So I did. And yep, it was pretty horrific.
Never been banned. Do you still, are you still in touch with Natalie? You still?
We are. We meet up regularly, sort of once once a week. We have coffee, sometimes at hers, sometimes at mine. I have never seen her again.
No. I've bumped into her a couple of times. I believe she's a teacher now in... last time I saw her was in Bristol, I think, but I think I saw her in Edinburgh as well. She may have moved. Hello, Natalie, if you're on. We'll try and get her involved in the extras for the DVD, if we can track her down.
Everyone asks me about her. She's so popular.
Yeah, no, people love her.
Probably once a month, someone asks me a question.
A lot of people do. A lot of people ask me about the girl from the Fist of Fun titles, which I always find, you know, there's a little girl. I always think, so whatever happened to the girl from the Fist of Fun? Tweet like that. Yeah, I'm not going to reply to you. I don't think there's... I'm not going to help you track her down. You know she's no longer a little girl. That is the only thing I feel safe about. But she got quite upset. She didn't... She kind of did... She was a glamorous woman, and she enjoyed being a glamorous woman, and she didn't enjoy some of the costumes we made her dress up in.
Because I was the glamorous one, really.
Yeah, you were.
If I remember rightly, and she doesn't mind me saying this, didn't her mum ring up?
Her mum rang me up one week to say, I think it was the when we had them had you in full Islamic dress, so she was in there. And she, but I think that week she actually sort of fainted during the rehearsal of it as well, but it was a little bit for effect of, she kind of wanted to be seen, so us covering her up in a yashmak and all that stuff.
Well, I was Princess Layla and she was... she was a Rob Prowse, wasn't she?
Right.
Dave Prowse.
Oh, was she the Darth Vader?
She was the Darth Vader, but dressed as a country bumpkin with massive sideburns.
Yeah. So she wasn't happy about it.
And I was a lovely, beautiful lady.
And one week, I think, a man she was interested in was coming along to the show. And that was the week she was dressed as a genetically modified potato. She was upset. So, yeah, her mum did ring up and ask.
I was so tempted to get my dad to ring up the following week and go, you make my son look like this horrible citrus fruit thing.
I don't remember much about how this morning Rich Not Judy came about. Me and Stu had done two Edinburgh. So we did a version in 1994, I think, was the first time we did this morning Rich Not Judy, which I'll probably talk to Stu about. Then we did this in 1997 in the Cabaret Bar. And I think when we brought it back in 1997, I think it was with a view to maybe trying to do something with it on TV. But it was we really left it to the last minute, because I've been writing a play. I think we were both doing solo, Stu was doing a stand-up show, certainly. And so I seem to remember coming to that show with no script. Richard Thomas was on the piano. We kind of met up the day before and we made some stuff up.
It was kind of pre Badil and Skinner Unplanned.
Well, they came to see that show that year. And then the next year we're in the same room doing what I thought was a very similar idea. they've managed to sell, Badil and Skinner have managed to sell the Badil and Skinner unplanned format, which is two blokes making stuff up all around the world and made millions of pounds out of it.
They've sold that as a format?
Yeah, it's quite impressive. So very impressive behaviour. Do you remember any... I mean, we made up the Trevor and Natalie song during that.
Yeah, that was an amazing. I don't know how you managed to make that song up. it just came out of you.
There was a thing that didn't make it through to the TV series, which was Trevor Locke's celebrity sock.
Oh, it's a gossip sock.
Gossip sock.
Gossip sock. Now I've managed to syndicate that.
Have you?
Personally, I don't have to do anything with it. Yes, it was a gossip sock.
Yeah,
it was a gossip sock.
So we did. I think we did the King of the Show, and we did.
We did the King of the Show. Yeah.
What was that thing they always used to bring on a tea trolley?
Yeah. Well, that stayed, didn't it?
It was a themed tea trolley.
They were in the Edinburgh version. They were the slaves for whoever paid the most money for a ticket became King of the Show. Might talk to Stu about this later. But then they were his serving wenches, and whoever gave the least money for a ticket, because we auctioned the tickets, was the extra slave and had to go and buy the king something from the shops. So whatever they wanted, they had to go and get. And sometimes they didn't come back, and sometimes they did come back. But often they spent 5p on a ticket, so we didn't feel too bad making them miss half the show. But it was more of an interview. It was a bit like this. It was a sort of interview show. We got like guests in, didn't we?
You had that weird band who played the saw, Faust.
Yeah, Faust. Yeah, which I'm sure Stuart will want to talk about. That was one of his bookings. And we had the guy from. I don't even really embarrassed the guy from. And I like them now.
Rich Fulcher.
No, she said there's something in the word shared, that guy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Neil
yeah,
Hannon.
Neil Hannon.
Divine Comedy.
Yeah. He was, yeah, the Divine Comedy guy. He was one of the guests, but I'd never seen him, really. I wasn't interested in music. And yeah, when we were doing the auction outside, he started bidding as a joke, and I took his bids, and then he was going, and then I got angry with him, and she went, that's our guest, don't it? So I didn't recognise Neil Hannon, so that was...
I remember I was actually a guest on it once as one of my comedy characters. And I turned up and they said, you know, what sort of intro do you want? I said, well, he's a kind of hapless, useless comedian. And you say, here he comes, it's Frankie Tan, he's not very good. And then introduce me and I'll come on and do my turn. And of course, I'm introduced as, here he is, it's Paul Butler in a wig pretending to be a silly man. You know. And so I finished this routine, and they had to ask questions afterwards, and they would just call me Paul the whole time. So, you know, here he is, it's Barry Humphreys, dressed up as Dame Edna, being a silly Australian woman.
We were pricks, I have to say. We were a pair of pricks, both of us. This is the 1990s. Now I was here last night doing the comparing the new act competition for the Leicester Square, and all these fantastic 15 young comedians or new comedians, all brilliant. Yeah. Like all of them brilliant. It was very difficult to choose who to win. And you think in the 1990s, just pretty much anyone who turned up in Edinburgh would probably get a radio or a TV show within 4 or 5 years. And we turned up to Edinburgh with no format, made something up as we went along, and then got a TV series out. But that just sort of seems insane, even though the TV series was quite different than that. So I feel sorry for these fantastic... And I'm scared of them because they're brilliant and much better than me and have lots of energy and ideas. But then also, there's so many of them that the good ones are probably going to fall by the wayside. There'll be no way for them to get through, the really good ones. So somehow we got a TV series that I think sort of started that year. I think that's right. It's next year, wasn't it?
The following spring.
But we used to do these kind of run-through rehearsals at the Battersea Arts Centre. Do you remember that?
I do, for the first series, wasn't it? And then we did the Riverside in the second series, I think, yeah.
And the QS Orange was just me in an orange leotard. Do you remember?
Yeah.
With my head through a table. Then I had to sort of pull out and do a somersault.
I've watched a couple of the episodes just in preparation for this, and it's quite, in the early episodes, it's quite interesting because, you know, the things that would go on, like the Curious Orange, I think in the second episode of the first series I watched, and the Curious Orange gets a sort of weird reaction because people don't understand what it is. And at the end, I say you'll all be doing it in the playground in a couple of weeks. Even those of you who aren't at school, you'll still be doing it. You'll be going into the playground in order to do it. So some things we stuck with, like the Curious Orange, which didn't work.
Yeah.
There was Gary Putner, which we didn't stick with.
Well, I'll tell you what, this shows how thick I was at the time. I remember you telling me about a couple of weeks later, you went, I've been in this chat room and sort of people aren't really going for the Curious Orange. And I said, well, where is this chat room? Where is it that you talk to this? Is there a bar? And I genuinely just didn't have any idea of the internet.
It was very early days.
Yeah. And then you said, oh, they all like you this week, the following week. So, there you go.
But I think we had confidence in some of the things, because like a lot, you know, things like, I mean, even History and Plenty, the first couple of weeks that goes out, people are just, it's just silence from the audience. Like, what the fuck is this? But you know, as it goes on, it becomes sort of hysteria over everything. So there was, do you remember Gary Putner, which we did in the first week?
Yeah.
Because it was what's incredible about it, it was nearly all live. So there was a few pre-recorded sketches, but we were doing everything live, and you were quite nervous about doing live stuff, I seem to remember.
Well, I think you got it slightly wrong. Gary Putner was in the first series.
Yeah.
In the Ironic Review, he was this kind of gauche...
Oh, that's right,
...kind of Gary Bushell sort of character in those little sequences. And you said, we've written this thing we want to put in the second series.
All right.
Which is a monologue to camera. And we had to film this before we did the live recording. And I did it, and it was always very quick, very quick. And I did it, and it wasn't very good. And I remember just being on a train coming back from Edinburgh, talking to one of these comedians, and his girlfriend said, "Yeah, I really enjoyed the second series, apart from this awful Cockney bloke I had on halfway through. It's terrible." And I went, "Oh, really? Yeah, that was me."
Well, it was nice. I think, again, if we'd sat with it, it might work, because the idea was just basically Richard Littlejohn and Gary Bushell every week in the... Basically, in the Sun, their column where you couldn't make it up, and then they would just say something, and every week it would be. And so it was just like every week you were meant to go, "You're having a laugh," which then turned to be quite a successful catchphrase for someone else. And then slightly changed, so "You're having a bath" and things like that, wasn't there as well? But it was, it was just confusing.
Yeah, well, it could have been Gary Putner da movie. Might have happened, but you know.
It's interesting. It's interesting the way the things we
could have been in Les Mis now.
And you were Thaddeus in the Sunday Hero sketch.
Oh yeah, that was my big part. Yeah,
it was. I enjoyed that. I watched that one today.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it was Jesus and the disciples as if they were children at school, and you were the disciple who didn't have anything to do. Do you remember it? And he's going, "You know, are you happy? Is everything all right?" There's a brilliant line that didn't get a laugh, which is Stu as Jesus going, "Is everything all right at home with your mum and dad?" Thank you.
Thank you.
Were you doubting Thomas? Was that your?
Oh, I doubt that very much. No, I particularly enjoyed doing those sketches. I thought they were great.
They were fun. They were fun. But what's astonishing about even watching it back is just how any of it got onto television at all. I mean, but certainly at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Afternoon. It's so rude. And like, and so sort of
I remember one of the complaints was, "I am a retired police officer." They always had to start with something like that. "And my daughter was watching this blasphemous sketch and it mentioned homosexuality. Is this the sort of thing that the BBC are throwing at us? Not only that, there's this gaggle of imbeciles screaming and shouting." It was just so funny. But then didn't a Sunday school teacher wrote in and said, "I know you probably think I would be complaining about this, but I actually use these every week as part of my class, and then we discuss it afterwards." And he says, "They're perfect teaching tools."
Well, as with all of the religious stuff that most of me, Stu and me have done, we very deeply researched everything and had thought about everything. So it was all about the kind of the contradictions that got thrown up within it. So there's a lot. I mean, there's a lot packed into these shows. It's kind of, I'd forgotten really how many ideas there were in there. But a lot of them are just deeply weird and unsettling. It's like when the Curious Orange goes mad and goes to the audience like in Jaws. Which we'd obviously pre-recorded. But the episode ends with a woman sort of screaming about her child being killed by the Curious Orange. Well, and that's the end, and just we go, we made this, and that's the end of the.
What I remember was when in the last episode of one of the series is when I had to be. There was a vote, I think it must have been the first series, where the audience could decide whether in the last episode the Curious Orange would get crushed and turned into juice while singing this kind of little sweet song. And they got in all these little stage girl ballerinas, you know, of about 3 or 4 years old. And they said, oh, come in and do the rehearsal. Oh, no, we're all a bit scared. And they were genuinely scared of this horrible orange thing with bananas for a hand. And then the director, Gareth Karavik and Charlie Hanson sort of went, oh, you know, come over here and meet him. And, you know, Paul, be nice. And I was going, oh, hello, I'm the Curious Orange. Are you all going to do a little dance for me? And everyone would go, yeah. And then, of course, when we rehearsed it, and I get crushed, go, yeah. They were all really scared and upset again. Won their confidence and then killed their new friend. They just. I'm just having sticky orange juice on my face, wasps around it all afternoon. Anyway, sorry.
And did people recognise you as the Curious Orange in the street, or did you?
Yeah, really weird. Well, it'd just be really hungover people. Sort of on a Monday or something, you know. I did occasionally, yeah.
Yeah, and then you went on to do Talking Head for the Tizer advert that you claim is nothing to do with the Curious Orange.
I genuinely believe that.
You genuinely believe that?
Yeah, yeah.
We need.
Have you seen the adverts?
Have you seen the adverts you're in of the Curious Orange, like Tizer Head? The Curious, the Tizer Orange.
Yeah, yeah. What was it you say? Because it was on the bumpers for CD UK. And you said, and here, because you used to all get introduced at the beginning of the live recording. And here he is, Paul Butler, the only crimson head disembodied creature who appears on a weekend in two separate programmes. Yeah, well, there you go.
Yeah, nice song. Nice. Nice, someone made some money out of that. And have you seen have you seen the Annoying Orange?
Yes.
Have you seen that on? It's a YouTube thing.
Yeah, especially with my young nephew, when my mum, his grand, said, your Uncle Paul, he used to do a thing called the Curious Orange, long before the Annoying Orange. Do you want to have a look on the YouTubes? It's boring. That was it. Then he showed me about an hour of Annoying Orange.
Is it good?
It's annoying.
The Annoying Orange sued the people who made the Annoying Orange sued someone else for doing something similar. That they sued, and I thought maybe we should sue the Annoying Orange people for doing something. Oh, so absolutely. it's quite interesting that they. I mean, I think it's entirely independent, but it's very, you know, it's a disembodied orange talking, but it's annoying rather than curious. Yeah. It's possible two people have come up with that idea.
Yeah?
It's all possible. You never know. So what have you been doing since I last saw you in 1999, Trevor? And when we left the last episode of This Morning Rich Not Judy, and I've never seen you since.
Well, you know, I've had several successful businesses and a marriage, which was also successful right up until the end of it. it was a success, and quit while you're ahead. And you know, then I've had some delicious meals. And you're laughing seriously. I had something that's called a triple a couple of years ago. It's a sandwich with three pieces of bread and avocado in it, and amazing.
You spend a lot of time in South America now.
Yep.
What attracts you to South America?
It's the weather, really. Weather and the culture, you know, and the triplets. There's three pieces of bread. I'm in a movie out there. Do you know
that? Are you telling me you're big in Peru?
No, I'm not. No, but it has been released.
Has it?
It has been released.
That's good.
Yeah, yeah.
What's the movie about?
It's about... I play a gay Englishman on holiday with his wife in Peru in the 1960s.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And it's set in a beach house, and there's a magic tree, and if you touch the tree, you go all hairy. It started out, when we were filming it, it was a comedy. Okay? It was released as a mystery. It's true. It's a mystery movie.
Do you speak in English in the...
I speak in Spanish.
Spanish, right.
Yeah, I speak...
Do you speak Spanish?
I speak Spanish.
Wow.
In my own life and on film. Yeah.
Speak some... Say, I've got a very small face in Spanish.
Yo tengo una cara chiquitito. Muy chiquitito.
Good, you finally admit.
Bastante guapo.
What about you, Paul? You've done it. You did a film that opened the Cannes Film Festival or something.
Ah, yeah, yeah. That was Paris Je T'aime.
Oh, yeah.
Which was a few years back. I don't know if anyone's seen it. It's one of these portmanteau movies where there's lots of little stories all about Paris, set in a different arrondissement, a little 5-minute love story. And mine was by the Eiffel Tower for the director Sylvain Chomet, who did the Bellevue Rendezvous, you know, the animator. Anyone aware of him?
Yeah.
Very good. The
Bellevue Rendezvous was excellent.
The Illusionist. So that was interesting. And I had to be a kind of comical mime artist, or terrible mime artist, in fact, which was great fun. And it's a strange thing how that came about, because I remember thinking that you lay seeds for jobs very early on, sometimes without realising it. And I remember when I was at drama school, I was asked to do a Saturday night cabaret thing where I said, let's do a silly mime. So we did the silly mime. And then another 10 years after that, I brought back this mime character. It was a thing where it was literal mime, climbing up a real ladder, stuck in a real transparent box, eating a real banana in this very exaggerated way. And then I did that.
And now you're miming yourself doing the real...
Yes, on a podcast. And, and so after that, a few years later after that, I used to do a club called the Regency Rooms with Lenny Bay, Steve First, and so resurrected it for that. And then I got asked to do it for Little Britain in the first series, and then Sylvain Chomet saw that and then put me in this thing, you know, like 20 years after the first time I did it. So it's strange how you get these.
So the Curious Orange could come back.
Yeah, could. A little seed.
A little seed in a serious film.
Yeah, there you go. Not very funny, but life-affirming.
It'd be quite good to do have the Curious Orange as a sort of serious. I mean, there were elements of it that were... Mm. The bit I saw was, again, because I think you were away for a couple of weeks doing something else, weren't you? So we that's why the Curious Alien came in the second series. So we pre-recorded some bits with you. There's a bit of you on a park bench with an old lady drinking tenants. So
oh, that's right.
Which you must have enjoyed, because you're the only non-tramp I know who drinks...
Tenant Super.
Tenant Super. Yeah.
Well, it's like a liqueur, isn't it? yes. I think I was doing a thing with Phil Jupitus and Alistair McGowan called Dark Ages.
Oh, yeah.
Which no one watched. For ITV.
Right.
So I disappeared, and then it clashed, but we were able to film my inserts.
Yeah.
And then I think you'd be brought in when I couldn't be there for the live stuff, The Curious Alien.
The Curious Alien, which was Emma Kennedy, who unfortunately cannot be here tonight because of her slapstick father. who has, you know, quite seriously broken his leg, but he's Welsh. It's still funny to... It's funny to laugh at a Welsh old man falling down some stairs, however bad the injury is. She did give me permission to... She suggested that I say stuff like that. So it's a shame not to have here to discuss Nostradamus and the sexual chemistry between me and Nostradamus, but maybe we'll interview her somewhere else about. I mean, there's so much strange stuff. I mean, that is a very...
Explain that. What's the real sexual tension between you two outside of that costume or character, or was it the character that you were attracted to?
Well, we have a very interesting relationship, me and Emma, over the years, I think. I think we've never... Our moments of amorousness towards each other never quite matched. And I'm not sure we ever really were amorous. I mean, she's sort of like my sister, which is why I want to fuck her. But we never...
Have you got a sister?
Yeah, I have, but, you know, I can't fuck her because it's against... Okay, I'd like to, but I can't. So, like with Emma, Emma isn't my sister, so I can. So yeah, she's like my sister.
Okay.
She looks identical to my sister. When we did the Oxford Review together, there was a time when she said... had to share beds sometimes, and she said, can I share your bed? And I said, yeah. And then, in the middle of the night, I kind of, you know, chanced my arm... And then, not in a, you know, in a bad way, I just sort of...
Used your arm?
My arm. I just, you know, I sent out a probe to see if there was life. And then...
Where's this going?
And she...
It was the 80s.
She
men and women were different.
She laughed openly at me and then said... And I pretended to be asleep. But then, like, years later, when I was... when we were in Edinburgh, she kind of got quite... I got involved with one of the actresses in one of the plays, and she got
with
quite...
With all of the actresses?
One of the actresses. I got involved with a lot of actresses, but I got involved with the actresses in one of the plays, playing High Super Jesus, and she was in that as well, and she...
I was in that.
Yeah, you were. And she was quite... She was sort of quite jealous. She didn't talk to me for, like, a week, and then I said to her... the thing is, Emma, like all these other women will come and go in my life, but you will always be there. And that made her all right. She was happy.
What a line.
It was pretty much true.
Yeah.
Pretty much true. So we have a nice platonic relationship that had a couple of, you know, it's like, have you seen that film Sliding Doors? It's a great film.
Which, coincidentally, came out the year we did the first series of This Morning with Original Jimmy. And The Truman Show, your other favourite film.
It was a great year for comedy. But then that was bizarre. It was quite bizarre within the idea of the Nostradamus character, apart from being 1999, and that's... I was quite obsessed with Nostradamus, and I wrote a play about Nostradamus that year as well, which is a bit more serious. It was a woman on a pretend Bernie Clifton horse.
Yeah.
Pretending to be a man.
Yeah, that's what got it for me. Yeah.
And so the episode I saw, just that I watched before, she comes on, and there's obviously a bit of sexual tension. She's predicted we'll kiss. She gets something wrong, so I have to punish her. I'd forgotten about this. So I sort of twist her false leg. She goes, no, properly punish me. And so she rips open her... It's open the top, and she's got like a false male chest that I then have to tweak and stuff. But then I think, doesn't it turn out later on that she is a woman pretending to be?
Yeah, I think so.
And
then
I think she rips off the male chest, and there's a false woman.
But wasn't
so? It's very, you know, it's like, and it's sort of me. And she's going to punish me, and I'm tweaking her nipples. At 1 o'clock in the morning, afternoon, on a Sunday, I'm kind of tweaking her nipples. She's gone. Oh,
you didn't also write the particular episode of when things fall out of cupboards. There was one where Kev Eldon is pouring a big tin of baked beans over her while she's having orgasms. You know.
I didn't.
Stu
wrote that. So right. I'll talk to Stu about his how he got on with Emma. See whether they ever. You know, we've known each other for a long time, me and Emma. So it's a shame she's not here, but also hilarious. It's not at all amusing. I'll ask you some emergency questions because people will want to hear those before we go. Right. I've got an emergency question. It's called Desert Island Dicks, and I think it's going to surprise you. What 8 Richards would you take with you to a desert island if you had to take 8? So I want you to think quite seriously about it, which if you had to take, when you're going to be stranded on a desert island with 8 Richards, which 8 Richards, you could select the 8 Richards. I'm already on there, I'm like the William Shakespeare and Bible Richard, so you've got me, just so that you don't have the embarrassment of not choosing me.
All right.
So 8 Richards, each.
Okay.
And 16
Richards. They all have to be different, and they have to be the 16 that you would take. to a desert island. That should fill up the time for the rest
of
the podcast.
Okay, I'll start. Yeah. I would take Richard Keel,
the
late actor who's just died, who played Jaws from The Spy Who Loved Me.
Yeah, don't think anyone's chosen him.
Right.
That's a good choice.
I would choose Richard Jobson, the lead singer of The Skid.
Yeah, who then he married. Who did he marry? He married someone like, I want to say Toya, but it wasn't Toya, wasn't it?
It's no.
Muriel Gray,
maybe?
I think so, yeah, maybe.
Okay.
He did a lot of TV presenting.
Right, okay. I would take...
The good thing
Dickie
about this,
Davis.
Dickie Davis, that's good. Well, good you've thought, your thoughts. Whichever, this is good, this helps.
Okay.
It doesn't help because I've lost three.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can chip in and, you know... The good thing about this is it's kind of funny for a little bit, and then it gets really boring.
Okay.
And then it becomes really funny again, and it's then, and it just.
Well, I'll take Keith Richard and Cliff Richard.
Okay.
And Richard the Lionheart.
Yeah.
And
could have gone for Wendy Richard, the whole triumvirate of Richards.
She's not really a Richard though, because she hasn't got a Richard. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Ricardo Montalban from
good.
Fantasy Island and the Wrath of Khan.
He'd be very good on an island.
Yeah. Okay.
He'd be good, that's a good choice.
Yeah.
No one's had him because he could be, you know, if you could have the little guy as well.
All right, Richie Rich, the cartoon character from the Archie comics, who is
doubly
eventually
Richard.
Died and became Casper the Ghost. Okay.
I'd have Richie Richardson, the former West Indies number three and one-time captain.
I don't want you to just be... You're not just choosing people called Richard. These have to be the eight that you would take.
All right, okay.
I just want to make sure you've got that.
Okay.
I would take Ricky Gray.
Okay.
Who runs a chain of fish and chip shops in East Grinstead.
Yeah. That's a good chip because he could prepare for...
He used to go to school with him, you know. I would take Richard Hawley,
the most popular
musician from Sheffield.
Yeah,
I wouldn't take that Richard Wilson.
Who says I don't believe it?
Yeah, wouldn't take him. That would get grating. Because he'd just do it, you know. We're on an island.
Does it matter if they're dead?
It doesn't. You've already chosen some dead ones.
I would take Richard Burton.
Yeah.
Oh.
Right. You're getting some
choices. Only as his character Vic Dakin from the film Villain.
I'm not sure that would be allowed because the character's not called Richard.
Oh, right, okay. Richard Burton.
Okay. Then you'd make your match.
I'd take Richard Cheese.
Yeah.
Who is a guy who parodies grunge music in the style of lounge.
Yeah.
I'll take Richard Milk, who is a man that parodies Richard Cheese. By just doing any song he can think of whilst pouring milk on him.
Sounds a bit like my act.
That must be all right.
All right, well,
I take Richard O'Sullivan.
Oh, yeah, good.
Playing Dick Turpin. The series in the 1970s.
Okay, I think that counts as 16.
Two, surely.
16 for both of you. This is a question to both of you. If you had to choose between dating a man who was a 6 foot tall penis, just basically was a penis 6 foot tall with a face, that's the only thing, apart from that, it's a 6 foot tall penis,
uh-huh.
Or a man who instead of a penis had a tiny man just attached to him there, and you have to date one of those two and probably go and have sex with them. Which one of the two would you choose of those two? So the little man is facing the man, his feet downwards.
I want him.
The man has no jet. I mean, he has balls, but he does, and then the man. So if you're going to make love with him, the man would have
does
to
Does the
be.
Tiny man have...
He has a tiny man as well.
It's infinite tiny men. Yeah. I knew it.
In both directions.
Brilliant.
Until they loop up, so the biggest one is also the smallest one, and then it's a circle.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a no-brainer. It's just a no-brainer, yeah.
Which would you like?
So this is a giant phallus.
6 foot tall penis. It sort of walks around on just like
testicles.
Slivers like a... No, they don't think it has balls. It just, you know, like a slug moves around like...
Wasn't this a character in The Organ Gang?
We were never in The Organ Gang. We didn't go that... You know, he was the unspoken member of The Organ Gang.
So basically,
Terry Todd.
Hang on a minute. So he's limbless.
He's got balls. He walks on his balls.
No, he hasn't had balls. He has a slug like just the bottom of his penis shaft is a slug like.
No, he should walk on his balls.
Well, that would hurt. No, he'd be in terrible pain.
Right,
and every time he moved.
Oh yeah, because of course there's no nerve endings at the base of the penis.
Not in a slug-like arrangement.
And presumably the only orifice is the little eyelet at the top.
That's right. Yeah.
The little eyelet. That's the correct term for it. Yeah.
I'm not going to say the race.
The external meatus.
Yeah.
The herring's eye, as I've been trying to popularise to call it.
So where is the face? Is it just...
Face is just on his... Like on the helmet.
Oh, the frenum thing.
So it's the frenum, yeah.
The frenum really can sad. Be the nose.
Yes. And then his eyes are either side of that, and then, yeah, and then his mouth is sort of underneath the foreskin, the place where the foreskin meets the... it's quite a messy... Maybe it's on the other side.
Where the food collects, yeah.
So those are the which would you choose?
I think because at least there's one personality you'd have to deal with.
Yeah.
With the other option, you've just got all these millions. Thousands of people trapped in this awful...
you'd never get bored.
Old David Cronenberg. Pan's Labyrinth.
But you're going on a date, Paul. You've got to think about it. You're going on a date.
Oh, it's
okay?
A date.
Yeah, you're going on a date. Your date doesn't really have a proper mouth. You're going to have to do all the talking. It's just going to have to nod or maybe wink. And you won't be sure if it's actually winking. It could have something in its herring's eye and just be... So you'll never know if it's really enjoying your anecdotes. Whereas
well,
the other
I
one.
Would know because it'd be laughing and his shoulders would be going up and down. And then God knows what might happen then.
Have you made your choices? You're going for the man, tiny penis, and you're going for the big penis. That's nice that you could double date. And then if you change your mind halfway, then you could stop. Go, actually, I've thought about it, Paul. Yeah. I would like the penis man to go, I'm glad that I've not got that. Paul, you've always got like loads of anecdotes of where things fuck up. But you quite badly fuck up quite a lot. Like the Julia Sawala one we had.
Yeah.
Was that the, you were saying backstage you had an idea of something?
Oh no!
No, you always say the right. He's very good at Paul. What Paul is great at is going to the famous person and getting them to talk about the thing that no one else would ask them about. But
secret affair.
Well,
I was going to tell the one from this morning with Richard Notchie.
Yeah, do that. But what's the secret affair?
I've been having a secret affair with your wife.
Very briefly, I was introduced at this book signing for about the Two Tone Tour, the Music Ska revival thing, and I got introduced to this guy from who used to be in a mod revival band in the late 70s called Secret Affair, and he was having a really good evening. And this woman who introduced me said, I said, how do you know this chap? I can't remember, is his name Ian? Can't remember. Ian Pace. Oh, then.
You're thinking of Ian Pace from Hale and Pace.
Yeah, Hale and Pace. Sorry, Ian, where are you? And anyway, so he was having a good time. And I said, how do you meet? And she goes, I used to book the Identity lineups on Nevermind the Buzzcocks. I said, I said, and you went on that? He went, yeah. I said, I don't like those. I always think they're a bit embarrassing, really, and a bit mean-spirited. He goes, no, it was good. The band site got a lot of hits the next day, and, it was a good thing, I said, really? But it's not like you were just the bass player. You wrote the songs. You shouldn't have been. And I thought, why am I doing And I said, obviously it was good for the, and I just ruined his evening, basically. Because he obviously had doubts about it, and then thought, no, it was all right, it was good.
You were right, though.
Yeah.
At least you knocked some sense into him. But you're very happy to talk to people about their, it usually works out well,
The one I do remember, though, from this morning with Richard, not Judy, it was very early on, one of the very first rehearsals, and we're all sitting around the table. Correct me if this is, if I'm wrong, but we got talking about conspiracy. No, it's about people who get into cults infiltrate cults to find out information and about how sometimes they get converted to the cult themselves. And we're thinking about what would be the most susceptible person to, you know, and we're saying it's probably someone who, you know, is not necessarily an atheist, but just kind of either way, you know, I could be Christian, could be an atheist. But if it's anyone who's staunch in either non-belief or belief, you know, it would be, you know, maybe more problematic. Anyway, it's a boring conversation, and I just said, "I mean, well, who would be someone you could imagine who might get who you wouldn't think, but might get turned around by a cult?" And I went, "I don't know, someone like Chris Morris, maybe." And then you went, "Oh, Joe's seen Chris Morris's bottom." And I went, "What?" And we had a lovely Joe Unwin was in the cast, which is Chris's wife.
Yes, she is his wife. Yeah.
Yes, and I didn't realise. And she went, "No, actually, I think you're probably correct."
Yes, Joe was... I think Joe actually made the decision not to be in the second series of this. Yeah. Written on Judy. She was fantastic. She was in the... Well, I'd really liked her for years because she was in that advert with the guy who went in the Fast Show.
Yeah.
Mark
Williams.
And it was the one where he goes, "We want to be together."
Yeah.
And then she just pulls that face. And I just thought, that is the funniest woman I've ever... Yeah. So just from the face she pulled in the advert was brilliant.
Yeah.
And then we got to work on this. And she was really good. She script edited the first series. Yeah. As well. She was a real kind of hard taskmaster.
Oh, she was great.
She was very good for us. But then I don't know why I can't... Stuart might remember. I don't remember why she wasn't in the... Say, probably because of you slagging off her husband. That's probably... She probably... decided not to be in it anymore. Anyway, look, this has been really fantastic. Hope you've enjoyed meeting back up again.
It's been wonderful.
A very partial reunion of sons. Please give a massive round of applause for my guests, Paul Butner and Trevor Locke, for his tiny face. You have been listening to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guests, Paul Putner and Trevor Locke. The music is by Pess, thanks to Orange Mark at the British Comedy Guide, and Chris Evans, not that one, at the GoFasterStripe.com. Thanks to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre, and to my producer, Dave Cribb. This is a Fuzz, GoFasterStripe.com, and Sky Potato production.
Hope you enjoyed the podcast. That is the second to last one. We'll be back next week with Stuart Lee, which we were going to charge for, but now there's no need to charge for, so it's free. If you appreciate all of this, do go to richherring.com and check out my tour, or go to gofasterstripe.com/badges and buy a badge. Or monthly would be fantastic. Or go to eBay and bid on some fantastic Lee and Herring, Collings and Herring, Time Gentlemen Please stuff. Cheers.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Thanks for listening. richardherring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And
Would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.